As part of Governor Andrew Cuomo's environmental and energy announcements during his multi-day State of the State addresses last week, he revealed the selection of a firm to move ahead with the largest offshore wind program in the country. To explain what this means and address other environmental news from the governor, we spoke Friday afternoon to Joe Martens, director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance, which tries to foster the development of wind projects, and in another life, he was Cuomo's commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Thank you, Dave. Great to be here.
So what is the significance of the governor's offshore wind announcement?
It is staggering in terms of its scope. And I thought the governor really put it in context very well in his State of the State address when he talked about climate change. Climate change is the biggest threat to the planet. It's not an exaggeration. He ticked off in words and with the his video behind him, all of the natural disasters that have been happening around the world. He mentioned that 2020 tied the record for the hottest year on record in the world. It's just there are so many events going on that sort of is a preview of coming disasters, more likely, in terms of what's in store for the planet with climate change. And New York has a really long history of being a progressive environmental state. We had the first state park in the country. We had the first laws on the books for clean air and clean water. And this follows in that tradition. New York is really getting out in front. And it's important not only for New York, but for the nation to prove that we can actually transition the economy and the way we produce and use energy, and we can make it work economically. That's the key. New York can't solve the global climate crisis, but it can set an example that others can follow when we show how it works. So the stakes are really high. What he announced on offshore wind is, in my view, the biggest and most important component, because these projects have the potential to produce more electricity than virtually everything else that's going on in the renewable energy world in one discrete project. These are really big. They're industrial size projects, and they produce power that is equivalent with the modern day fossil fuel fired plant, except they don't create any emissions in the process, which is obviously a huge and compelling factor for getting these things to come online.
Can you give me some context about the nearly 2,500 megawatts of generating capacity these offshore wind projects are supposed to have? For instance, when I think about homes, how many homes could this power?
Sure. So it will power about 1.3 million homes. So 1,300,000 homes. It, the two Indian Point nuclear reactors have about 2,000 megawatts of generating capacity. These offshore wind farms will, just these two, and there are several others in the pipeline, will have 2,500 megawatts of generating capacity. Now, the two aren't equivalent. I don't want to suggest that, because a nuclear plant has what they call a higher capacity factor, meaning it operates more of the time. Obviously, wind fluctuates. There's not always super strong winds. But I can say this, that in the worldwide space of wind resources, the resources off of New York's coastline and the Northeast coastline in generally are the best in the world. Senator Kaminsky is proud of saying that, New York is the Saudi Arabia of offshore wind because our resources are so good.
Considering how many more steps there are before construction can start, whether it's negotiating a final contract with the state, getting federal approval, and a litany of other hoops to jump through, when can New York expect to reap the benefits of this new project?
As I mentioned, there's three other projects that are under contract in New York. So these two that the governor announced yesterday should be under contract in 2 months or thereabouts, maybe 2 or 3 months. But Equinor has already been through that process before, and they have a large-scale project already under contract with New York State. So we don't really anticipate any wrinkles there. But as you point out, that has to go through a federal permitting process. The transmission lines associated with this have to go through a state permitting process. So all of that does take time, and it will be probably mid-decade, 2025, 2026, before these projects actually start construction.
What is it?
But I will add to that, Dave, that the construction process actually goes fairly quickly. These companies are very experienced. They built wind farms in other places around the world. There's 30 years of experience in the offshore wind space. So once construction starts, it can take them, you know, two construction seasons to have an entire project built.
What does it mean that one company, Equinor, has received the bulk of the offshore wind projects in New York? Is the state taking a risk by putting most of its eggs in one basket?
Well, I'd say it's still, you know, early on. We have a lot of projects to go. Every one is a competitive process. There are other bidders, and there's lots of companies that are really anxious to get into the New York market. We have members on the New York Offshore Wind Alliance who are there simply because of the market potential in New York. And the 9,000 megawatts that New York is aiming for in 2035, I actually regard as a floor. I think we could go well beyond that if these projects are successful. And I'd point out that, you know, the companies that have contracts, or in Equinor's case now will have two contracts. These are super experienced companies. They're very large. They've built thousands of megawatts of offshore wind projects in Europe. So I think the risk is very low that, these projects will stumble. And, you know, I think the more important question is the federal reaction to these projects. The current administration in Washington has not been extremely receptive, but we expect the next administration to move the process along, more quickly and, in line with their own climate goals.
We're talking about the green energy policies in the governor's State of the State address, and our guest is Joe Martens, director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance and a former commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. You referred earlier to the 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind power that New York is required by state law to have by 2035. Based on where we are now, nearly halfway to that number with this latest project in terms of, projects that are allocated and envisioned, do you think we're well positioned to hit that goal for 2035?
I think we're very well positioned. And again, it really now is turning to the federal government to permit the projects. These projects are all in federal waters. So the Bureau of Offshore Energy Management is the central federal agency that's in charge of permitting. They're also in charge of leasing offshore wind space for these projects. So that's the next important thing beyond permitting that, we're relying on the federal government to do. We have a pending wind energy area designation in the New York Bight, which is roughly the offshore area between New York and New Jersey. And that has been on hold for a while under this administration. It has been, heavily reviewed, lots of stakeholder input. They, being the Bureau of Offshore Energy Management, have revised the configuration. They've contracted it a bit based on concerns from different stakeholders, but the process has been stalled. So very soon, Dave, we could start bumping up the absence of areas in order to build these projects. So that is really important to getting to that 9,000 megawatt goal by 2035 is these new lease areas. But again, meaning the offshore wind proponents and people in the alliance are confident that the new administration is going to start acting on some of the stuff that got started, but sort of hit it. This administration just hit the brakes about a year or two ago, and things have stalled.
When will we know the cost of this deal and how it compares to wind projects in other states or other countries?
So After the state will announce the contract terms and the price, but only after the contracts are negotiated. That's how it went in the state's first solicitation, which was announced in 2019,
right,
when the governor signed the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act and announced the first, you know, two projects, offshore wind projects in New York. So, you know, all we have to go on now is that first solicitation where the price came in 40% less than what the state was expecting. And worldwide, the price of offshore wind continues on a downward trend. So I'm really anxious, Dave, to hear the prices on this project and see how they compare to the 2019 awards. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that the price is going to be extremely competitive and lower than it was in 2019.
One of the major challenges now in terms of getting renewable energy resources to where they're needed is the fact that people, the demand is not necessarily where the projects are. And in the case of upstate, you know, it's a continuous challenge to get that energy to downstate where there's much more demand. And in response to that issue, the governor is saying he wants to build new transmission lines. Can you explain the scope of what he proposed last week?
The scope is, once again, extremely ambitious, and the governor acknowledged that. He started out by saying, you know, these projects, have many of which have been talked about and considered for years. In fact, you know, I was on the Energy Highway Task Force back in 2011, and some of the projects that were cited as, you know, to break ground this year were projects that started back in 2011. So here we are in 2020. Took 9 years from, you know, conception to hopefully construction. So, you know, that alone should tell you what kind of pace we've been on. I just want to circle back, though, for a second, if I can, to offshore wind. And another one of its attributes is that it's close to where the load centers are. It's close to where people use lots and lots of electricity, and that's New York City and Long Island. So it helps. It's not going to solve the problem of our inability to get to the generation upstate to downstate, but it does alleviate some of that because the transmission from these offshore wind projects is going to land directly in Long Island and New York City. So once again, you know, it's a compelling reason to do these offshore wind projects because it partially addresses the transmission issues itself.
Considering that some of the transmission projects where they're trying to bring energy from upstate down to customers in New York City area can take, you know, 8+ years, is there reason to expect that future projects can be expedited? Is there something about this current atmosphere, whether it's state regulations, federal regulations, society in general, that makes you optimistic about the speed at which this can be done moving forward?
Well, I'm optimistic in part because Governor Cuomo has made this a priority. You know,
was it not a priority in 2011 when he announced it? Was he was just kidding around?
Well, let's put it this way. Acknowledging the problem and acknowledging that things have taken too long is like, you know, the first major step in the process. He acknowledged the problem in 2011. But the problem, you know, a lot of things have happened since then. We had, you know, the whole raft of, you know, super weather events, destructive weather events, Superstorm Sandy. And I think that opened the eyes of not only the governor, but the legislature and, you know, the recognition that all these renewable energy projects were also taking years because they were so difficult to site. You know, look what happened. You know, last year we passed a new siting law in the wake of the Climate Leadership Act that is intended specifically to accelerate the process. And it's an open acknowledgement the process wasn't working. And I think the governor's saying the same thing all over again is, you know, we've been talking about transmission for way too long. And he understands that in order for all this renewable generation to succeed, it has to get from upstate to downstate. And there's a recognition that transmission, you know, the transmission issue is an environmental issue. we don't, if we can't get that renewable generation and emission-free generation from downstate, excuse me, from upstate to downstate, then those peaking plants that are using fossil fuel have to run more frequently downstate. And that's an environmental issue because it impacts the urban communities and lower-income communities harder than it does others. That's where all the fossil fuel plants are located. So this is a huge environmental issue as well as a climate issue and everything else. And I just think the acknowledgement of that has gotten stronger and stronger as the years have progressed. And New York has really done some very aggressive things, both legislatively and administratively, to say we have got to move this ball forward a lot more quickly than we have in the past. You know, the luxury of debate, the luxury of a permitting process that is protracted and can go on for years, just can't happen any longer. We have to accelerate these projects and get them built. And I guess my final point would be, this governor loves to build things. You know, he made that clear when he gets up there in the state of the state and he talks about all the projects that once again were talked about for years, but now they're done. And, you know, what was the Tappan Zee Bridge and is now the Governor Cuomo Bridge is his shining example. The improvements to LaGuardia Airport, the train station, the Moynihan Station in New York City. You know, these are all things that languished for years and years and years, and he is really proud that he can, you know, put his imprint on them and get them built. So I think he's going at these renewable energy projects and transmission projects with the same zeal that he is that he attacked all those other big construction projects.
I'm curious, on a personal level, do you ever just wish that you were back in, I guess, on the inside of things at the DEC with this everything that's going on right now in terms of environmental and energy developments? You ever regret not being part of DEC right now?
There's moments, but not all that many. You know, the 4.5 years that I was there were, you know, rough and tumble years. Obviously, you know, fracking was the kind of the centerpiece of my tenure there. And honestly, I feel like, you know, I can be more effective from the outside. You know, there's no question, Dave, I miss it at times. But, you know, Basil Sagos is doing a great job at DEC. And it's I think it is good. You know, change is good. And I love what I'm doing now. So, you know, no real regrets.
You think Basil's going to be here to the very end, like be the guy to shut the lights off? I mean, they tried to leave once and he couldn't pull it off. What's the deal with that?
Well, I don't think it's, I wouldn't say that he couldn't pull it off. You know, it's clear that he was looking for a post in the Biden administration, and I still wouldn't be surprised if he lands one.
Oh, I meant more like, I think it was 2 years ago, after the governor got reelected, there were like reports that he was going to leave, and then everyone's wishing him well, and then guess who's back? And I'm not going anywhere, everybody.
Well, I'm not sure how all that came about, but you know, Basil clearly, you know, if you follow him on Twitter, he was there was a campaign to put him at the top of EPA.
Yes,
that obviously didn't pan out. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up somewhere in the Biden administration. They have a lot of positions to fill. Yeah, he's a very capable guy, and he has, you know, great experience. So I don't, you know, I don't think he's going to be the one that shuts the lights off. Frankly, he's young, got a whole career ahead of him.
What celebrities, while you were DEC commissioner, did you befriend? He's got Mark Ruffalo and like Leonardo DiCaprio under his belt. What were you doing back then?
Mostly they were, you know, nipping at my heels over fracking. So I didn't quite have them in my court. Mark Ruffalo and I did develop a relationship, and he, you know, he paid me back by providing the Alliance for Clean Energy, my parent organization, a nice video for our annual conference that was back in the fall. It was a virtual conference, but he provided a very nice video for us. But, you know, celebrities are not necessarily my world. I'm just, you know, a regular guy without friends in high places.
That's why we like you, Joe. Well, we've been speaking with Joe Martens, director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance and the former DEC commissioner. Joe, thank you so much for making the time.
It's always a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.